civil servants. They thrive off my body. Their trip is with power, back bacon and welfare. Police, they arrest me. Materialists detest me. Pollution, it chokes me. Movies, they joke me. Politicians exploit me. City life, it jades me. Hudson Bay fleets me. Hunting laws freak me. Government is bumbling.
KBOO Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We've been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KBOO Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kboo.fm/planRFP2015.
The time is 6:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio on October 12th, 2015, Indigenous Peoples Day. Happy holidays. Anne McDonald here with co-host Fernando Gapison. Today we have a couple of guests. Kevin Jessicael is a union electrician from IBEW 48, and Derek Dunn is a union plumber from UA 290. Welcome, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to point out, disclaimer, they're not here representing their respective unions. They're here to have a nice roundtable style discussion about the Friedrichs versus California case. Any union people, union members, I am one, are concerned about the future of unions in this country due to this case, and we need to build a better understanding about it with what's going on. Fernando, would like to give a bit of a background on this case.
The Supreme Court will be rendering a decision on this case near the end of June 2016. They'll be making a ruling on two issues. Issue number one is whether the Abode versus Detroit Board of Education case decided in 1977 should be overruled and public sector agency shop arrangements invalidated under the First Amendment. Issue two, whether it violates the First Amendment to require public employees to affirmatively object to subsidizing non-chargeable speech by public sector unions rather than requiring that employees affirmatively consent to subsidizing such speech. Now, what all this means is that for the United States, public sector unions that have agency shop arrangements, it means that the potential of these unions losing 50 to 70% of their income, their dues revenue, their ability to influence and give working people a voice. The arguments will be begun in October of this year. The case is driven and funded by the National Right to Work Legal Defense Fund and the Center for Individual Rights.
Fernando, just real quick, what exactly is non-chargeable speech? that the Rebecca Friedrichs, who's kind of spearheading this with about 9 or 10 other teachers, that's something they take issue with. What is that?
In the public sector, the money taken or used by the unions, the dues that are paid, are broken down into chargeable and non-chargeable funds. Chargeable are the direct services that unions or that members receive, a collective bargaining, grievance handling, those things that directly impact their wages and working conditions. Non-chargeable are those charges that are used for political work. Now, somebody could obviously argue that when a union advocates for legislation that improves funding and so forth, that this directly impacts them. But political work in general, like especially backing candidates and so forth, is usually indicated as non-chargeable. And currently, unions are required to notify all of the agency shop people that they're eligible to opt out once a year. So they have to affirmatively opt out so that these non-chargeable amounts are not taken in the form of dues.
So even non-members, non-union members who are still paying the dues, the union is required to tell them every year, this is where your money's going. And then the non-chargeable speech, you could say political speech, that's something that they can opt out of. If they only want to pay dues to cover collective bargaining, grievance handling, having the staff and the support there from their local, if that's all they want, then that's all they have to pay for. This other thing they can opt out of voluntarily.
Right, but they have to say we opt out. Or that they opt out and don't want to pay the political freight.
So, I'm a public employee. I'm a member of Labor's Local 483, I'm an employee from Metro. And so, for me, I worked hard to organize a shop. And if somebody wanted to, come in and say that we want to change the structure of what's going on here sometime in the future, I'd want them to know why we got organized, who we were. So I did a little bit of research on, who exactly the California Teachers Association is. They were established in 1863 with about 100 teachers in San Francisco. So they've been around for about 152 years. In their first 60 years, they fought to provide a free public education and free textbooks to all California children, regardless of race. So as you can imagine, the 1860s and 70s, so forth, that was a controversial issue. They spearheaded the establishment of community colleges, and they fought for smaller class sizes. They still do to this day. And they led efforts to outlaw child labor. They won a major victory in 1927 when the Supreme Court ruled that a school board could not fire a female teacher simply because she got married. That stuck out to me. I thought that was pretty progressive of them back in 1927. So they've continued to fight for teachers' rights by calling for a statewide teacher pension system. And in 1975 is when CTA members finally won the right to collectively bargain their contracts. That right had been previously denied to public sector workers. It was only there for private employees. So, like you said, Fernando, the work is funded by dues that are paid by members and fair share payers. So this is where the Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association case comes in. So it's kind of about who should have to pay dues, what those dues are going to, and then you referenced the 1976 Abood versus Detroit Board of Education case, where they touched upon this before. About 40 years ago, and at that time it was upheld that the Supreme Court upheld the agency shop arrangement, whereby every employee represented by a union, even though not a union member, must pay the union a service charge equal to the amount of union dues. So to be specific to California, that's about $1,000 a year per employee. And if they opt out of the political part, that's about $600 a year. You know, are they getting what they pay for with their dues, for one? And is that money being used, or, you know, are students being put first? Is that money being used in a way that, you know, parents and teachers can support? So, Fernando, so we wanted to talk a little bit about, hang on, I had your list of questions here. So why does it matter? How does this decision affect working people in the United States, both public sector and private sector workers? We've got a couple of, private sector, an electrician and a plumber here who both, you know, want to learn a bit more about this case and have their say and, you know, show some solidarity with what's going on with this.
Well, one of the things I left out earlier about non-chargeable hours, all of the representatives in the public sector unions have to fill out a time card. And one of the other areas that are considered non-chargeable is actually organizing. And so the thing is that I guess a question that I would have for Derek and Kevin is that since you all won't be directly impacted by this decision, not immediately, why is this decision important actually for all working people in the U.S.?
Well, I think I can speak to that. This is Kevin Jeskill. So what these groups, like the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation and the Center for Individual Rights, what they aim to do is to individualize the American workforce because they know those individuals are weak. They're trying to defund our unions and effectively cut the head off of our collective voices. And it's definitely not going to stop with Friedrichs versus CTA.
Yeah, an injury to one is an injury to all, so we should be trying to help out our brothers and sisters, even if it's a public sector job. We should really all get involved.
And I thought that it was really important that this is an issue that goes beyond just union folks. It really goes to all working people who actually benefit from the improved working conditions that unions have brought for all working people.
Yeah, in our in the private sector, when our organizers go and teach the non-union of the benefits that we have, and they're about to jump ship and come over to the union, first thing the non-union shops do is give them a raise. Start paying them a little bit better benefits. Obviously, they don't give them full boat packages like we have, or the right to, you know, bargain with them every 2 years or anything like that. They just give them just enough to keep them calm and let it pass. You know, they're wanting to leave their shops. So I mean, just by osmosis, it helps out the non-union.
The one of the things that, you know, when collective bargaining was made the law of the land in 1935 with the passage of the Wagner Act and the National Labor Relations Act, the notion of collective bargaining recognized that workers by themselves, individually, didn't have any power against corporations, against these management organizations that held all the power. So the thing is that politically, how does the union give individual workers a voice?
Well, just by gathering all the voices that you can and getting different opinions from as many members as you can, to push an agenda for the people, you know, a true democracy. Everybody have a discussion about what they want to see in their collective bargaining agreements, and then using the money and funds raised by that union to push, you know, the collective will of the union combats the corporations, you know, wanting to just break us up individually and take us inside rooms and talk to us and tell us this is how much we are going to pay you. You know,
these organizations like the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, they've argued that collective bargaining has given unions too much voice. And we know that National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation and the Center for Individual Rights are funded by people like the Koch brother, the National Chamber of Commerce, and so on. And they actually provide, national estimates are 10 times the amount of money into the political system than the unions can provide. So how does a decision that would, in the case of Oregon, might zap 50% of the funding of unions, weaken their ability to have any kind of a voice? What does this do for working folks?
It definitely would weaken our voice. Something that I thought was interesting, I was reading an article about from Troy Senek, who is a former George W. Bush speechwriter. And one of the criticisms he had was how much money the CTA was putting into politics. Over the course from 2000 to 2010, it was $210 million, which was the largest by any group. The next highest was from SEIU, the Service Employees Industrial Union. And that was $107 million. The two highest contributors, you know, contributing groups are public sector unions. The third highest, which was also about $107 million, was the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, Big Pharma. So, I mean, my argument would be that as a union member, if I want to have a say in the direction that my shop is taking, I go to the union meeting and my voice can be heard there. I vote on who my business manager is going to be. Who my union officials are going to be. That money goes to pay their salaries and for the important work that they do. And I get to choose who's there. If I don't like the direction they're going, I can, you know, vote, you know, somewhere else. I can go to the union hall and make a bunch of noise. And if people agree with me, you know, the ideas, we can all get together and we have our voices heard. You know, the workers at that big pharma are, you know, they might not all agree with the political contributions their company's making, but they don't get to vote on who their boss is going to be. They don't have any say in that matter. You know, their job is to go to work. Really quickly, I'll just take a minute to remind everyone you're listening to Labor Radio on October 12th, Indigenous Peoples Day. Fernando and I are talking to Derek Dunn and Kevin Jeskel, a union plumber and a union electrician, who were here to just talk about the Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association case that the Supreme Court is deciding next year, which will hugely impact public sector workers, organized workers, and that impact will inevitably spill over into other organized labor.
This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
90.7 FM. So part of the issue, if money in politics is the issue, then you could say, well, this is money that the workers have a say in. They have a voice in where that goes. And then, you know, they're competing with the likes of the Koch brothers and, you know, these other groups. And so you could just say they're playing ball. You know, they're in part of the field, and they're having their voices heard. If we want to get money out of politics, it's all money we want to get out of politics, not just organized money.
I actually saw this always looking for organizing opportunities for a long time since George Meany took over the AFL-CIO back in 1955. There's been a struggle by some in the union movement that we need to organize. And clearly what Friedrich is going to point out or really heighten the weakness of unions both educating the public and educating their own workforce about how important unions are to working people in terms of their wages, in terms of their working conditions, in terms of their democratic voice in society. The thing is that, so what are some of the things that you think unions should be doing? I mean, the Oregon State AFL-CIO is having their convention starting October 23rd in Seaside, and they're going to be discussing this matter. What would you like to see, and what are people currently doing to organize and educate folks around this issue?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, one of the things that myself and Derek here and several other unions have been putting together is a community rally. We're calling it Halloween Community Rally in the Spirit of Unity. That's going to be on October 31st at the Tomacall Waterfront Park, just south of Hawthorne, from 11 to 2. And its main aim is to start to bring together not only unions but community groups and hopefully the public at large. We really need people to start getting together and talking. You were mentioning, you know, our voice in terms of our monetary political voice, but really I think unions do a lot more than that. They give us a voice through educating us. I think union members tend to be educated, informed, and active, and by defunding us, they're hampering our union's ability to organize us around that, and they're just trying to weaken us overall. So this is kind of us taking something, you know, matters in our own hands to come together and start to talk to one another and start to build up the solidarity needed to fight back.
I think historically, working people in the United States have demonstrated that we can organize people across the country. I remember when we organized for civil rights in 1963 and hundreds of thousands of people amassed in Washington. I remember when we fought against this notion of reverse discrimination, and hundreds of thousands of people organized against the Bakke decision in 1977. People organized for the right of gay people to be able to get married. I'm looking for communities, not just unions. I'm looking for communities of people to rally behind this vital civil rights. I mean, the right to unionize, the right to organize workers into collective behavior is a democratic right and promotes democracy for all citizens, all people in the United States. And I think that we should amass, we should have massive demonstrations and show the right wing, show the court where the will of the people lies. And absolutely, the more we organize, the better we'll be. And this is a great opportunity to let working people know the importance of unionization. And it's something that we all have a responsibility to do.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not just about organizing, you know, union workers who are represented. Yes, it's people that are members of their community groups that are just people maybe that are unaffiliated with anybody and are looking to get active in any way. Maybe there's maybe the Friedrichs versus CTA case isn't something that they are particularly passionate about or interested in. Maybe raising the minimum wage is something that they think would impact them more directly and they want to get excited about, be involved with, help go out and collect some signatures and volunteer maybe, which is like events like this Halloween rally are, I think, a prime example of what we need more of. It's not something that started off as, you know, any particular group said we want to have a rally. It was a few friends basically over beers who got together and said that we want to create some solidarity, and then just turning to their respective organizations and asking for endorsements. And the excitement has been just really nice. People wanting, and it's not going to just be a rally. It's going to be a carnival for the kids. It's going to be a lot of fun. Different groups that are going to be there include, you guys go ahead and list some of them off.
We have, 48, IBEW Local 48, UA 290.
Jobs for Justice, right?
Yeah, JBJ is going to be there.
Jobs for Justice, Oregon AFL-CIO has endorsed it. 350 PDX, 15 Now, SEIU 503, Portland Tenants United, Pacific Green Party, the Working Families Party, Vaz, Narrow Pro-Choice Oregon. The list is growing daily. Everybody we've talked to has been really excited about this. It's not just concerning right to work legislation. We're also focusing on renters' rights and tenant rights, which are a huge issue right now, obviously. Raising the wage, supporting immigrant rights. We have to stop scapegoating our hardworking brothers and sisters out there. Mm-hmm. And we need to come together for the common good.
It's remarkable, the diversity of groups there. You know, you wouldn't necessarily think that 350 PDX is a climate justice group, and they're worried about climate change and environmental issues, and they're going to be standing there side by side with, you know, union groups. You know, just as a laborer, I can say, you know, we want to work. You know, we want good, solid, you know, paying jobs. If that's installing solar panels and building wind farms, fabulous. You know, we want to be a part of that too. You know, immigrant rights groups. It's, you know, all these different, you know, folks coming together to have a little fun, to learn a little bit more about each other. And it's going to be a great opportunity for anybody to get involved. Again, that's going to be on October 31st, Halloween's a Saturday this year, just south of the Hawthorne Bridge in the Waterfront Park from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And there's going to be a wide variety of people there. And a lot of us are going to be dressed up in costumes. So be sure to become ready to party.
This is a time, you know, we're in a period. The American union movement and the American labor movement is in a period when the right wing is amassing forces to annihilate the union movement. And Friedrichs could be like losing an arm for the American union movement. 36% of the public sector is organized. Only 6.6% of the private sector is organized. Public sector unionism is the fastest growing area of unionism in the United States. If the right wing is able to prevail on this matter, it will be a crushing blow to the American union movement. So it's time for all justice-minded people to rally together and support this important movement, and to show the Supreme Court where we stand. We stand for justice.
Yeah. And, go ahead, buddy.
So I'd just like to say, you know, nobody's given the working class anything. Everything we have now, what wages, benefits we have, community services that we have, we've only gotten when we've come together and fought for it. And unions are one of the primary ways that we've done that. We need to preserve it, and we need to grow it even beyond that into a real community movement to get what we deserve. So.
Yeah, and the fight now is death by a thousand cuts. You know, back in the day, the corporations and stuff like that would set up a town. You would live in that town. They, you know, it was a bloody mess looking back at labor history. Now it's, okay, what do we legally can do to find little loopholes? What can we do? So it's just little cuts, what they do now. And that's why membership goes down slowly, because you don't feel the effect, you know. Like, obviously, if tomorrow they just came out and everybody makes $5 an hour, there would be thousands of people in the street. But, you know, just keep cutting away at laws. Just keep cutting away.
So we really gotta come together,
yes,
to not only to maintain what we've worked so hard to build, but to keep it going forward and to create a better future for the next generation of workers. So that's about all the time we've got, guys. It's been a lot of fun. Kevin and Derek, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For
thank
coming
you.
Out today. And Fernando, it's been good seeing you again.
Nice seeing you, Ann.
All right. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This was Labor Radio. Stay tuned for the next show. Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of How We Got On at the Portland Playhouse, Wednesday through Sundays until October 25th. Directed by Jen Rowe, How We Got On is the story of three teenagers in the suburbs of the Midwest who dream of fame in the golden age of hip-hop in the late 80s. That's How We Got On, Wednesdays through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. through October 25th at the Portland Playhouse, 602 Northeast Prescott Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.